Dangerous delivery towards the spot, it's in! And it's Pat Hooven, who else?
Long cutting in off the right side, has another shot! Oh! Jack Byrne with another incredible goal for Shamrock Rovers!
Here is Mandrew, is that kind of position? Oh, what a goal! What a goal from Donny Mandrew!
Well, ever since last Friday night, we've been absolutely buzzing for this show to talk about the five-goal thriller in Tala. Shamrock Rovers 3, Dundalk 2, we had Jordan Flores, we had Jack Byrne, we had a near hurricane on the Saturday, we had the weekend that the League of Ireland has badly been waiting for. To talk about all of this later on in the show, we don't have the Duchess and the Duke, we do have Pat Finlan, and before all of that, we have Dan.
Good intro, yeah. John. How are you?
Jack Byrne met them in the Guinness storehouse last night. I live right beside it. They could have invited me or called up.
No. It's funny, unlikely you would have got the shout for that, to be honest. Yeah.
The royal family and the weasel, as he put it.
That's a nice way of phrasing it, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, he was probably already on a high after Friday, and then he gets to like mingle with the great and the good, you know,
yeah,
of the world.
She, apparently she was like, I know you scored a nice goal, but who's your man Flores?
Yeah, no, yeah.
She didn't actually say
it. It's more so Jack saying, you think your family's characters, you know, should come out to my place and I'll meet the whole
clan. I like the way Gary Ringrose is really respectful and Jack has the two hands in the pockets. What's the crack?
Yeah, he's just, he looks a bit starstruck, to be honest.
Well,
you know?
Do we need any more promotion of the League of Ireland after the week? Was Friday the biggest promotion the League of Ireland has ever had?
I wouldn't go that far. I think,
biggest.
No, European runs, like, you know, like I think Dundalk 2016 and Shells, we'd have Pat Fenlon later. That's the biggest. No chance, right. No danger. But I think for a domestic match, like for a league match,
or just a goal,
it just really delivered. Like, the goal was obviously amazing, you know, and that added to it. But even just coming away from the game on Friday, and you do have these moments across the season where you walk away and you're like, oh God, if it was only like this every week. And I mean, it's not. That's unfortunately the reality. But so often, and we spoke here, I think, on preview last week about it's early in the season, there's going to be a bit of shadow boxing, it's going to be cagey, they're going to... And it would be natural that would be the case. Didn't want to show their hand. But it was just a combination of factors, an early goal, the elements, just the way the game panned out. Maybe the fact that both teams, like, you know, made mistakes, but that actually added to the game overall as an occasion. And we got the best of what there is in the country. Like, we still need other clubs to come with them. But these top-of-the-table games in recent years, which we've had, like, they haven't always delivered. Like, the Dundalk-Cork rivalry was great, but the games, I don't think they delivered a game like that one. In terms of Friday, and like it swung in several different directions. You know, the goal was obviously a bonus, but even just the entertainment, the fact that it wasn't just that, you know, that didn't just punctuate like a 90-minute bore. Like, it could have gone either way. I mean, I think Rovers probably deserved to win, and in saying that, Dundalk could have equalised at the end. I mean, you know, Pico Lopez with a brilliant last-ditch header, and yet that probably didn't even get mentioned in a lot of the match reports and you know, discussions of the game because so much else happened. So it was brilliant. Like, you just hope that, I mean, it was 24th of the April is the next game and you're circling that in the diary now, and I hope that this is like, this lays down the template for their games this season. Now, I think to a degree it still shows how far the others are behind, because I don't think there's other teams that could have, I don't think any of the other teams could have matched those levels probably on the night. And you know, that's where we are. But I think looking the bright side of it, that you do have two like really good teams there and a rivalry that I think has the potential to last.
Because there was such a good atmosphere at the game as well, listening back. And I know Pat Finlan will talk about the teams below maybe being a long way behind. But what struck me thinking back was it was a lot like the Cup Final in ways, in that in general play, Shamrock Rovers were comfortably superior. But in terms of chances, Dundalk like had probably
I don't think that superiority, like, there was 25 minutes before half time where Dundalk were dominant, and I think that was the most dominant either team was in
I
the game
agree with you
at
there,
any
then.
Point.
No, they got the goal and they
rallied. They got the goal, and even Stephen Bradley spoke about it afterwards, that they had a really difficult 15 minutes or so.
Aaron Green like missed a sitter.
That was prior to that. But I'm talking about after that, and I think it was that period coming up to half time, and I think that's in a bizarre way, I think Rovers will take the most heart from it. And I think that's what Bradley said, that like they were against the ropes, they were maybe sucker punched a bit by the goal, and then Dundalk were just turning the screw. Should have really scored, should have gone in ahead and didn't. And then you know, things turned, and there's no doubt, like the second goal, the Hooban goal came against their own play at that stage. You know, I think that Rovers were just gradually getting on top and they didn't panic again. I think that's what they will take from it. I think there was a couple, I mean, Rovers lost Joey O'Brien early on. I think Sean Gannon was struggling in the second half. That was a factor. I think the game was so high tempo, it just became a bit stretched later on, and the Dock actually became a slightly bit more ragged compared to what they usually would. I even watch back the winning goal, and I mean Shields was forward, like trying to press on, and had a big defensive run back before Jack Byrne scored, and they just didn't get the bodies around them, and it was a bit unlike them. They conceded a goal from a set piece at 2-1 ahead. I actually think that Rovers were more dominant in the game in Tala last season that they lost than they were on Friday. But on Friday, in the key moments of the game, they hung in, they delivered, they got through the rough patches, and then they prevailed when they had the strong patches. But it was a great game, and yet you could have had an equaliser at the death as well. You know, you could easily had it.
If you're asking years to come, where were you when this goal was scored? My answer would be, I was actually watching it on my phone at Dundalk Races, leaving the track. But Dan, what was the press box area like for this? I mean, you must have been just on your feet.
No, well, we weren't on our feet. That's actually inappropriate decorum. But like, it was an extraordinary strike. We were at the angle. Now, subsequently, another clip has come out this, like, oh, this wasn't as good a goal.
That angle is the one in, it's like Lisa in Jebediah Springfield, like, the myth is better than the truth. Just don't show that angle.
But it's at a different angle. Mm. And I knew that Manus had a touch. Like, that wasn't a surprise to me. And then you watch, like, these views here, and, you know, there's a slightly different perception. But to me, it doesn't change the technique, the pace, absolutely, the power, the athleticism. And that's probably what I didn't appreciate at the time. I was marvelling at the almost, I made a reference to Paul Scholes, because I always think of a volley from a corner.
We had Tomás Campbell's fan video as well, actually, which gave
that gives us an impression of the flight of the cross as well.
And it was like, as much as Manus got a touch.
Here we go, like, this is the ball.
Notwithstanding his right leg, the power he has to put in that as a standing position, but to get over the ball.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, Flores, and I'm sure his coaches will reflect on this, he didn't have a good game. So he had an amazing goal, but he needs to do more in general play if he's to be that player that maybe Dundalk need in the centre midfield.
Yeah, and he's clearly a talented player. Mm. This is his first real crack at a run of games with Dundalk. I don't think he'd played two back to back.
Two worldies in a few days.
But he, you know, like, to actually play a couple of games back to back, he hasn't done that. But I still think it's an exceptional strike. I don't think Manus couldn't keep it out. And the speed, and I think to a degree you need to almost have been there to fully appreciate it, you know, to fully get a sense of just that wow factor, that moment where it naturally just lifts you off your seat. So I think it's goal of the season. I don't think there's going to be a debate. You can find any angles you want.
You never know.
That's not good. I don't think it's going to be
Well,
topped.
Flores was goal of the season up until that game. Now Flores is still goal
of the
season.
He's running his own competition. It's a strange one for him because, like, you know, like, they've lost the game. Yeah, he wouldn't be human if he wasn't absolutely buzzing by this reaction that it's been seen around the world, like over 6 million views, probably climbing on now. America, I saw someone saying in Australia, like Mark Bosnich was correcting someone on the pronunciation of Dundalk on Australian TV. Like, but you can't really buy that sort of publicity. Like I've made this point about it before. Like, people go to games, go to sport in this country or any sporting event. Like, you want to see people do things that you can't do. You want to see things that kids will look at and go, wow.
You were playing Astro today. I doubt you did that.
Like, there was a lot of stuff that people could not do. But in a negative sense of the word. Like,
namely move.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That would be one of the main
pitch
things.
Pitch battles. What have we got going on here?
Well, this is a reference more so to the Cork Finn Harps game. I don't know if you saw the goal mouth conditions.
Interesting one. So I don't know the laws of the game. Maybe Pat Finn will help us on this. I don't know if that goal from Harps should have been disallowed or not.
Well, there was a pitcher. There was a still pitcher which does make it look like it was a foul, but the striking thing about it, from speaking to people that were there, was that the goal actually the goal was given, and the distance between the goal actually being given and the goal being disallowed, Shane Keegan spoke over the weekend about how both teams had reset into their position, and it struck me as perhaps, like, Liam Bossan was out for the count, and it you would nearly look at it and think that is this a delayed response to the severity of the injury? And you think, oh, how have we missed this? That's just now. Neil Doyle will have a different view.
We can't, well, Neil Doyle gave the goal.
We can't interview referees to ask them about stuff.
And according
really,
to Ollie O'Horgan, the assistant didn't initially flag for it. But, I mean, if you look back, they should be able to change their mind on something. And it may well have been a free
kick.
Well,
I know, but, like we don't have VAR here. Mm. Like, you know, yeah, OK, if they reach the right decision, you probably should be happy.
From your perspective, if you slide in on the goalie and he's kind of on the ground, is it dangerous play? It was near his head?
Well, you look at the picture, it looks like a foul. But like he knew the conditions, so he executed a slide to make the connection. And
massive
the
win
ball,
for Cork,
the ball was there. Massive win for Cork,
what
but the point about pitch battles, you look at Talca, this is the flip side. You have a brilliant game on Friday in Tala. And then you look at the highlights of elsewhere. Talca's struggling. No fault of the clubs.
Dan, we're in the middle of a storm.
Exactly. And they're cancelled grounds in some cases, and Shells are leaving Talca. But Cork, it's been a factor. We've had games called off. We've seen Sligo, Waterford, and reschedule other matches. It's just something like this weather is a problem that we have at the moment. And with our fixture schedule, it's not great for the product, and you just be a bit worried about the impact the pitchers are going to have in the coming weeks.
Yeah, because we already had Daly Mount obviously getting a bad old dose.
Yeah,
the first
it's
game.
Just something that we have to be slightly aware of.
The Galway freezing aspect to this. Are we getting to Galway freezing?
Well, no. Galway is.
We're already talking about
Galway's. Galway's fifth. Galway's fifth.
No, we've already mentioned Shells.
In what context?
Like they beat St. Patrick's Athletic. The pitch wasn't great. No. Okay, let's talk Shells. Can we get to Galway anyway?
Maybe some week we will.
Because I was in Tala for like the complete antidote to what Friday was.
Yeah.
And it was
so Shells are obviously on the surge. But
this is definitely the boy
it.
Dawson trying to get his way here, putting a bit of Shells in there.
Yeah. No, but Shells is
massive
great.
Massive win.
And they've got experience as well. I mean, I know that they're newcomers to the Premier Division. But when you look at it, they've got Deegan, they've got players like Luke Byrne, players like Kilduff, and they seem to have a knack of, like, you don't hear people saying, well, Shells have played especially well in the games, but they have a good defensive
Ryan
record.
Brennan, you as well. These
and they're grinding out the results and the points. And I don't know who's going to be relegated this year. You know, normally, like in recent years, we've had maybe that one weak team who's collapsed. You know, like you've had Bray and even UCD, like, you know, their squad was decimated last year. I don't know this year. There's no obvious contender. And while we're probably bemoaning the lack of depth beyond the top two, I think we could end up with this really, really interesting relegation race this year, because I think, honestly, you could swing in any variety of directions. But we'll do a bit of Galway, because it actually is a story.
It was just the nature of the game. The game should have been called off.
You were there, right?
Yeah,
was there any sense with 20 minutes to go that the game was... like? Was there people looking around asking the question?
Well,
was players... managers talking to the officials about it? Could you see that?
Not really. And I think Alan Murphy at half-time like took off a player who was basically blue. But I think he was so wrapped up in both his centre-backs being injured.
Wrapped up is an unfortunate term.
Yeah, he didn't know what to do. But the ball would not stay stationary at the corner flag several times.
Yeah. I mean, apparently it wasn't mentioned in the match report, delegates report afterwards, but it shouldn't have come to that. I think there has to be some lessons learned from it, definitely.
Come back for part two of the show. We have Pat Fenlon. Welcome back. Don't forget you can get us on the podcast format and on YouTube as well, but mainly the TV show. And Pat Fenlon, a veteran of TV shows at this stage, but probably not a veteran of many games like Friday night. Absolutely.
No, it was a special game. It was just one of them games. And I think from the start, because the hype around both clubs and both teams, I was expecting a really decent game. I know there's a little bit of talk, maybe a little bit negative, but I didn't see it that way. I thought the two of them would have a right go at each other, and in fairness to both teams, they certainly did that.
You were a midfield general in the day. What did you think of the midfield battle in general? Because I'd slightly disagree with Dan here in that as much as Dundalk had a patch, I thought they were struggling for large parts of the game actually in midfield.
I thought Rovers started really well, but I thought for that 20 minutes, Dundalk played probably the best I've seen them play for a while. Even last season, I thought they were at it. But again, Rovers showed that character to come back in. I didn't think the midfield players were as good as they can be. I didn't think Shields was as good as he can be. I didn't think Jack Bourne's as good as he can be. You know, so...
It's fairly harsh on Jack, is it?
No, not really. I expect him to be, I thought his passing was awful. He scored a great goal in the end, and probably because we expect a fair bit from him. And the same with Shields. I thought Shields was off the game as well. So I just thought it was, it was tactically a good game, but I think both sets of players are sort of let play and going seeking to win the game. I think one point that's missing from it is probably, if you take Rovers losing Bourke and Gary O'Neill, the two big players for them.
And early on in the game.
And I think, and that's a big one as well for them in the game. But I think they're two players that would start for Rovers. And Bourke is going to be a big player for Rovers this year, I believe. I believe that Rovers think, I know they've brought in Gaffney, but I think they think that Bourke will contribute 15, 20 goals in the season on the back of what he did before he went to Preston. So he was a big loss for them. So for them to come through it and win the game with missing them two, and like you say, Joey O'Brien getting injured, it's a massive win for them.
What was the vibe like from the managers afterwards? Because obviously Dundalk would very rarely go from being 2-1 up to losing again.
Well, I think that was the basic point of any part made. And I think he was particularly frustrated by the second goal, the Lopez header, because at that stage, you almost think that Dundalk are going to manage the game with their experience, and they don't really concede too many goals like that. I mean, it was a routine enough set piece, you know, and I think that killed them a bit. And yeah, he didn't necessarily elaborate too much beyond that. I mean, Stephen Bradley was sort of, of course, in great form. And when you look at it, this season from last, I mean, they were 1 point against Dundalk last year. What, they eventually beat Bowes in the Cup semi-final, but in league, you know, did a dreadful record. They've scored late goals against both of them. They've also finished the game strongly as well. And I think one difference for Rovers as well, if you look at their changes on Friday, that they brought on Joey, so they lost Joey O'Brien, they were able to bring on Scales, and then they were able to bring on Gaffney to give them something different. You look at the early part of last season against Dundalk, they went up there at the start of the season, they had to play young James Furlong in one of the matches because they were tight. I think in Europe, remember Lee Grace was sent off, they had no defender on the bench. They just have options now that they maybe didn't have before. And actually, in a bizarre way, Dundalk probably had to bring in players who were new enough to the league and actually we're probably more untested in a way than Rovers, in a bizarre way.
I think that's the difference with the squads at the moment. I think Rovers have invested in their squad. You know, they've given Stephen the resources to go and have a right go at Dundalk, and he's done that well. He brought in good players. And that is a big difference. When you lose Bourke, you lose O'Neill, you lose Joey O'Brien in the game. They've had players to come in and be able to do the job, where last season they might have been a little bit short if they'd have been missing them three players. So, looking strong at the moment. But again, as a game, it was a very, very good game. I thought it was a part in the second half that dropped a little bit, but then it came again, you know, and the last 15, 20 minutes was fantastic, I thought. Absolutely brilliant.
I think self-belief-wise as well for Shamrock Rovers, and that Stephen Bradley referenced this, I think, before the game, that kind of Sligo, Bowes and Rovers were their sort of hoodoo teams last year. Whatever about Sligo, like against Bowes mentally, I think they were having problems because they were losing so many games. Against Dundalk, they couldn't get over the line. They've now comfortably enough beaten Bowes in their last, fairly comfortably, two, and they've won their last three against them. They've now kind of beaten Dundalk in their last two games, and mentally they just seem to have this belief now that they're going to eke out wins, and it must be a big advantage for them trying to win the title.
Yeah, and it can be small margins as well. You know, if you take it last year, the Bowes games, I mean, a couple of decisions went against them that were very harsh as well.
Yeah.
You know, and then you take it, and Dan made a good point, Lopez last minute clearance last Friday. They're things that can go against you on certain nights. So, you know, we earned that right as well, and you earned that look for them by working harder. And I think their squad is much stronger. You know, they have invested in the squad. They've got some really good players in there. And when they lose one or two, they're able to bring in players that are more than capable of standing. And I think that's what Dundalk have had for a period of time. If they lose players, they brought in players that are more than capable of stepping up. The thing about it now is a challenge for Dundalk. You know, I said before the game, there's two things in it for me. It's the hunger of Rovers, you know, and have Dundalk still got that drive and determination to keep winning. Winning the way they've done over a long period of time is very, very difficult to sustain, you know, and to keep doing that. And now it's a challenge to them because people are now talking about Rovers being the main challenge to them. They've had Cork on their heels for a period of time, and in fairness to Cork, they won a few trophies as well. But it's a big, big ask for Dundalk now to come back as well and try win another league title.
That's going to be interesting. I mean, their response to defeats in recent seasons has been one of the things that's defined them. They've gone on these big runs after losing. But it's like they have new players. I know McElhenney will come back and they have been missing him. But they're trying to, you know, introduce players that haven't been in the league before. So, and they go to Finn Harps on Friday, which I think is actually a real sort of... It's actually a real challenging fixture coming off the back of it. So they've Kolovic, the Serbian guy, they're trying to integrate him. Sloggett is still, they've had Shields and Benson, or Shields and McElhenney. Sloggett's still trying to find his way. Cameron Smith, Will Patching, they're just finding their way a small bit. But I think Rovers, and I think the one thing I took from Friday is I don't think these teams are going to drop too many points elsewhere.
That's the
point.
You can't.
So you know you can't be slack. Like you need to. Both of them are going to have to maintain a winning run to keep up with each other. I don't think the strength is there to challenge them regularly enough that you can afford to ease your way into it. They just have to start winning.
One thing you got to be careful is you can't write Dundalk off. They're a very,
well,
very good team.
They've played them twice at home.
They've got some fantastic players, and is right. There's a few of them coming in that are finding their way in the league. It's not an easy league to play in, you know.
But so, Pat, what if Rovers lose Jack Byrne in the summer, for example? Then does everything change in the narrative? Because you don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I think Jack is a big part of what they have, but I think they've got a lot of good players in that position. You know, I'm not sure they're going to lose Jack Byrne in the summer, to be honest, but he seems to be happy playing his football here, and it would have to be life-changing for him to go and move away, I'd imagine, at this stage. So I don't think so. I think what Rovers have now is they're able to go and replace. No players are replaceable. If they lose him, I'm sure they'll go and try to bring someone in. Or I've heard Steve, and it's the one area of the team that they are really, really strong. If you take into account, like I said, Gary O'Neill is missing in that team. Dylan Watts comes into it. Bulger comes into it. So they've got some real, real quality midfield players.
We will discuss this a little bit more in part three, but Pat was making the point that the distance between those two and the rest, it doesn't seem to have exactly shortened in the off-season.
No, I don't think so. I think it's got wider. I think both of them have strengthened, and I think, you know, if you look at both of them sides, and you take into the game on Friday as well, the one thing I take from, you look at the conditioning of both teams, you know, the fitness levels of both teams, really strong, and you look what they have behind them. You know, and I'm saying about trying to catch up and what can you do. It's really difficult. When you've got the resources both of them clubs at the moment, it's difficult for other clubs. And it's a different league for other clubs as well, because some of them other clubs will be thinking, we just need to stay in this league. Others will be thinking, is there an opportunity with Europe? You know, so they all have little different agendas and where they want to be as clubs. So, but I think the two of them are a long, long way ahead of the
moment. You made the point about you don't know who's going to go down, but it doesn't look exactly apparent who's going to finish third or fourth at the moment.
No, I think Bo Shells is going to be a really interesting game on Friday now. I know it's the TV, you know, it's the air game, and the two clubs you know very well. And like, you hope it's going to be a great occasion, but you just know it's going to be a different, you know, quality of affair, you would think. But it's hard. I mean, like, it's sort of an open house in behind. I don't know what you think, Pat. Your thoughts on the race for third as such? It's early days probably with some of the clubs, isn't it?
It is. When you look at some of them, Shells have come up obviously, and people would think, well, you know, a team coming up is always in danger of maybe going straight back down. I don't think it will be. I think they've recruited really well. You know, Bowes have had that getting to Europe last year. There's a bit now expectancy for Bowes this year. Mm. Can they finish third? You know, I think people are expecting that to happen.
Big squad as well.
Yeah, they have a big squad. They've signed a lot of players, and again, the club have backed the manager, which is great to see. You know, and then there's Derry. I think Derry have a really decent squad. I think he's done a fantastic job there as a manager. You know, so you're probably realistically looking at the teams that should be battling now for. I mean, Pats for me should be battling for that third position. I think Pats have underachieved over the last couple of. It has been a shaky
already
start.
Lost two games.
I've seen him against Waterford, and again, going back to last season, where the goals coming from, I think is going to be Pats' problem. Waterford again, I think if Waterford can stay in that league, they'll be happy. Hearts will be thinking the same. You know, so it is interesting to see who can finish in that third and fourth position, and it does allow, you know, some of the other clubs. We forget Cork, who've been a huge club
big
over the last four
for them
or five
at the
years.
Weekend.
It was a massive win because, you know, they needed it just from a pressure point of view as well. And Neil gone in there. It's just, it's you want to get points on the board quickly, don't you? And they've got some tough games coming up, so it was a big win for Cork.
Relief for Neil Fenn.
Oh, like, yeah, badly needed. And they had a couple of wobbles in the game, it seems. But, yeah, I mean, it's a new group of players. We spoke about it last week. They're still learning the league, and at least they have a few points, you know, 3 points on the board now to try and give them some kind of foundation. But I think, you know, Pat's Cork on Friday is a sort of an interesting game as well in terms of where they're both at.
You're welcome back to YouTube and the podcast. It actually looks like somebody from a live studio audience just handed me a note. But it does say from Conal. At Conal Meegan 13, after Rovers vs Dundalk, best LOI games in your memory. Ooh. Some good memories here now. Yeah. Some involving yourself, I hope.
Yeah, I played in a few good ones, all right. Probably one of the better ones I played in was at Dalymount. I think when Dermot was the manager of Shells, we beat Bowes 6-4. I think we were coasting at one stage 4-1. They got back to 4-3 and we ended up winning 6-4. But it was just one of them games. It was goals galore and a bit manic at times.
Also, have you played, been to his bar in Lanzarote yet?
I haven't, no.
Jim McLaughlin was there the other day.
I've seen that, yeah. Jim is over there. It's great to see Jim looking well as well. So, you know, Dermot's living her up at the moment. Yeah. You know, could never see him run the bar in Lanzarote but when I played under him. But
he's still doing a blog as well on the league from time to time. Yeah. He just does a blog hammering Fran Gavin and a few other people every couple of weeks. And then he, like, goes back and then, you know, it follows on from there.
It does look a great little enclave for League of Ireland fans over there, but other games anyway that come.
Yeah, probably the other one that stands out was actually playing for Bowes against Shells. Funny enough, the game is this weekend. We beat shelled 4-1 in Talca, which was a big win for us. We, you know, it was the year of, I think it was the year where it was a three-way playoff. It was a bit of a shambles at the end, but it was probably one of the better performances I played in the Bowes team, you know. So there were so many of them. Like, I suppose in relation to goals, there's loads of them. And yeah, then there's games where you maybe win a league and they're not as good, or win a cup and, you know, they're not as good. So probably too many to think of.
There's two different grades, isn't there? Like, there's the high-scoring games and there's the high-quality games. And I think, actually, I like Friday because I had a bit of both. I had goals, but it was actually a good level. Like, you think of... you know, you think of 6-4, the Rovers 4-1 back to 6-4.
Santry massacre.
Dave Smith getting thrown under the bus afterwards by Rico. And that was a great game, but like, that was like in Santry, the pitch was cutting up. Maybe was it a great advert in the way that you would use that term about Friday. But then like you would also think of, and I was sort of mentioning to Pat off air, like I think around 05-06, like you had Shells, Cork, Derry, even Drogheda. And that's the thing about, like, there was four good teams. I remember you'd be going to just, that was a high quality game. Not necessarily an epic, like, memorable. You'd won then in Cork, I think, which you won. And wasn't like this is a thrill a minute game. You're thinking this is a good level. It's a good match. And there's some of the cup finals as well. I know it's sort of talking about league games, but the Derry Pats Cup final, the last one in the old Lansdowne, even the Sligo Drogheda one had a drama in it. You know, like there was the little chip over the wall by Joey and Doe, wasn't it? So you've had some good ones, but I think Friday really, I think it set a pretty high bar in terms of recent memory. I don't know if you have any of your own memories. Remember the Dalkin Galway had one back in the day on a Monday night. It was a cup replay. It was like 4-3. The game should have been called off, I think.
That's gone back a good while now. That's gone back slightly before.
Jumbo Brennan
time.
Played like
mid-90s.
Mid-90s. And yeah. I was at that game as a kid. It was just, this is incredible. But it would have been called off now without a shadow of a doubt.
One of my favourites would have been Galway United losing 3-2 to Derry City, but Liam Coyle scoring one of the best goals I've ever seen, and just, I suppose, realising at that time that not enough people appreciate how good a player like he was. But I have to say, Pat, the standard has gone up, where we maybe expect kind of, there was so much quality in that game Friday. I think Dan makes a good point there. The 6-4 in the Martin Stadium that time, the days of winter football, it was a lot more kind of rushed and frantic, but I thought technically the game had an awful lot going for it on Friday, and I don't think that's unusual now.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I'm not 100% that the standards improved dramatically. Well, even from playing or managing, I think we like and said that time where I managed Shells, you'd Sport and Fingal as well in there, who were spending money.
That period, the level was
you'd
very
Bowles,
good.
You'd Pats, yeah. You'd Cork, a lot of good teams, a lot of good players. You know, I think at the moment we'd probably two teams that are a long, long way ahead. And it's an interesting point you're talking about earlier on about pitches. You look at Dalymount, you look at Talca, you look at Ballybuffet, and then you look at Talla. So there's no excuse for a pitch to be bad, in my eyes. You know, Talla was, I walked the pitch in Talla, it was soft in areas, but it was absolutely immaculate.
I will say though, Pat, it probably rains twice as much in the West than the East generally. That's actually factually, I think, true.
But I think what's happening, sorry to question, I think what's happened with Talla is that Talla as a ground is like, you know, this has been used, like it's hosting women's internationals 21.
Yeah, it was still waterlogged on Saturday.
But the problem with Talla is this is our showpiece league. This is the biggest league in the country. If Talla can be in the condition it can be in, Talca can be in the condition. Dalymount, they're all council on ground. Surely they can all be in the same condition.
No, I agree. I think
and Dalymount, the first game against Rovers was scandalous, and Talca hasn't been good the games I've seen. So it's no, and they're the little things that can let us down as a league. Mm. You know, you're talking about a standard of quality of football. If you give the players something decent to play on, most times they produce a decent
game. But in your era, right, if you played in summer football era, I believe it would have been a different standard, because the pitches were invariably quite bad in those days. I mean, and...
Yeah, listen, that can...
It's a bit of an excuse now.
Well, it is, but again, I can relate back to the winter football, as you call it, the best team to ever play in the league, the right team was Shamrock Rovers in the 80s. You know, they played through all them pitches. Milltown was a carpet, but they had to go and travel away. So it definitely can help. And I think the one thing summer football has done, it allows teams to train more, allows them to train longer on better surfaces as well, in daylight, not having to train under floodlights or maybe in car parks like we did back in the day. You know, so that has improved the game.
You've made an interesting point there. So that Rovers team of the 80s, to your mind, was the best League of Ireland team in your sort of lifetime or from what you remember. So comparable to the Dundalk 2016 team or the Shells team that you managed, they were still the best.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Right. I think that, and again, people go back forward to other great sides, but that Rovers team is the best team I've seen. I'd love them to put them in this era where it's full time and being able to just concentrate on the football. But they're some fantastic players, absolutely fantastic players.
I think that is one of the interesting points about the league and the time which we've probably watched it, that when we started watching it, like say in the 90s, it was wholly part-time. And probably a lot of players, I've always thought this, that if they'd had the opportunity now, when they came home from England, say,
to be in
the Rovers Dundalk environment, what could they have done? Like, I think maybe if levels have improved now, it's probably the conditioning and athleticism rather than, say, footballing ability.
Yeah, and that's where I go back to the point of even the summer football training. I started at St. Pat's. We trained behind the shed end in Inchicore in that the sheep were still on that were going to get slaughtered. It was just a muck bat. Lights were really bad. I was half blind at the time anyway, so it made
like
it worse.
And
it was just... So if you actually think of back then, and we won a league on the back of that, you know, to know what the players have. And that's great because it's improved and that's what you wanted. But it's difficult to compare eras as well because that Dundalk team has been absolutely fantastic.
Well, whatever about comparing eras, how do we compare North and South at the moment? You're obviously in Linfield day to day. The league up there goes over the heads of a lot of people down here, sadly enough. And you were just telling me there, Bastian Eary's not really getting his game at the moment. I didn't even know that. I just assumed he was. So what's going on up there? You're finishing the league, or you're finishing?
Yeah, we're on the home straight anyway, now. Yeah, we've two games left before it splits into top and bottom. So it'll be interesting. We're 4 points ahead at the moment. So it's a tight league. You know, there's probably been up till the last couple of weeks. There's probably been four or five teams that could win it. It's probably dropped off maybe to two or three now. So. We had a sticky spell the last few weeks. We've been very good. So we're hitting a little bit of form at the right time, which is brilliant. But it's a tough league. I mean, I played in it as well. It's a tough league to play in as well. Standard-wise, compared to the two leagues, I would think the league down here is a little bit stronger at the moment. There's no doubt about that. I think the Dundalk-Linfield result proved that in the United Union Cup final. So, but we're making strides, and they're making strides up there. There's two or three clubs now looking to at the full-time model as well. So but it'll take a bit of time to catch up, I would think.
Yeah, I suppose the All-Ireland League chat has gone fairly quiet then.
Yeah, it has. I mean, I think it hasn't gone away, but I think they're obviously... I don't mind it going quiet so much, because I think where things were left was the clubs are looking for more information and looking for a bit more detail, and you would assume that they're off in the background doing that. There's a lot going on at the moment. We have the new authorities running the FAI. I don't know, I was interested in Pat's views on this. We've heard early noises from Niall Quinn and from Roy Barrett and the new people that it does seem that the league is going to be more front and centre. Even privately, you're hearing that things are going to happen in the next, some announcements or stuff in the next while are probably going to happen. So, like, again, even goes back to pitches and the presentation and the product and stuff. I think a lot of this stuff can be centralised to some degree. I know the clubs have to have their own responsibility and pride, but again, if you're talking about increased funding and whatever it might be, I think, you know, you have to prioritise pitch maintenance and a level and a standard that, you know, that you're not just giving clubs to the money to squander it, you know, that you're actually improving the product. But I don't know what you think, Pat, as someone who probably would have been quite critical of the... if we can call it the old FAI now. I don't know if we can use those terms yet, but are you sort of encouraged by what you've heard thus far from the new people?
Yeah, I'm encouraged. You know, you want to see change and you want to see quickly, and probably want to see a little bit quicker than it's happening for me. I think there's some good people have gone in there, so you're hoping that they're allowed to start the process and continue that process to develop the game. The big difference for me and the key for me is that the League of Ireland has been at the top of the discussion. For years, we've always been... You know, to hear the League of Ireland being mentioned even in the Dáil, or, you know, politicians mention it, that's unheard of for their league. So, and that people have come in, have now seen that there's a product there. There's also the fact that, you know, we've got to start producing players at national level, you know, and it's getting more and more difficult for young players going away. So we need to give them an alternative here, which means the league has got to develop to get better. You know, so I'm hopeful. At the moment, probably hopeful is the word.
I know you make a good point about this. That we're almost like really paranoid about what others think of the league and the standard and all that. But Mick McCarthy genuinely seemed like he was like, this is a great advertisement for the League of Ireland the other night. And I was like, I know he missed the Jack Byrne goal, but at the same time,
I mean, the FAI book of quotes I think were used there. I wouldn't be going placing too much stock on the quotes that he used, but that was a good game. But with that, that's not the norm.
We need more of that.
But I do think that, and I think that's the significant point that Pat makes, that it's actually part of the discussion. Like, even that goal was in the Late Late Show on Friday night after and stuff. And like, again, you know, it was packaged. It went around the world quickly. Like, it's all part of being a modern league. But like, I do think that in a weird way, that day in the Dáil before Christmas, when Shane Ross, without probably thinking, said, oh, if the FAI goes, the league goes, I think in time that will be remembered as a quite an important day because there was a backlash from that. I think, you know, the league had been beaten down to the point where the clubs nearly thought that to lobby politically they had to do it all through the FAI. You know, they didn't really, and that was partly through their own weakness and maybe, you know, they just didn't understand that the power that they had, and they were able to actually, in the aftermath, go, hang on, we contribute to communities, we employ in communities, you know, we bring something that maybe it's not everywhere, it should be more widespread, but there's still like a couple of hundred like employees that are as affected by this as the staff in Abbottstown. And that, I think, will go down as a day that was important because all of a sudden, politicians were, and I noticed, were on the back foot. They were rattled by the criticism they were getting, and then they're hosting meetings and they have to come out and be seen to follow up on it. Well, so it like, you have to build in this momentum now and not let it go. Absolutely.
It was like the James Connolly line, the great only appear great because we're on our knees, and the League of Ireland clubs were downtrodden. And when you look at today, or yesterday rather, the HRI, Horse Racing Ireland, brought out this five-year plan speaking about more government money coming in, and football has just plodded along, biggest participation sport in the country. And you mentioned that this is rare that it's even brought up in the Dáil.
Yeah, but I think that was a position that we were put in. You know, that was where we were in the box to say...
Within the football community?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think that was, you know, I'm a firm believer that the game, the League of Ireland, is the top game in this country, and it should be at the top of the game in the country, and it should be involved in the big decisions that are made in this country, you know, and I don't think that's been the case over a long period of time. You know, but again, some of that, again, the clubs have to take responsibility for, you know. Were they strong enough to speak up, you know, and probably not at the time. But it was difficult for them as well because, you know, they needed people within the association to be bailing them out at times. So, but I think that the fact, I think it's, rather than look back, I think it's to look forward, and you've got people now to have an interest in developing the game.
Do you believe in Niall Quinn, for example?
I believe Niall has an interest in developing the game here. Yeah, absolutely. I think he has an interest. I mean, Niall is not coming from a League of Ireland background, but he knows that, you know, even going back to the young players that have gone away and he's done that, that's not healthy at times for some young players and to be able to keep them at home. So I think to develop the clubs, we have to have an alternative. They're still going to go at the moment because we don't really have many alternatives. You see Rovers doing a bit of work in relation to the academy and some of the other clubs, but there's no real alternative to keep these kids here. You know, so I think that's part of the development structure as well. Not just the League of Ireland, but the overall structure of the clubs within the League of Ireland to make them pillars of the community and make sure that, you know, there's plenty of work going on and make the product better. That's what it's about, is making it. If you make the product better, as you've seen last week in Tallaght, people will come and watch it. And it's peculiar because if you look at the gates for the last few weeks, I take Shells, for instance, and the great team, Shells team that I had, or one of the ones that I played in, we'd have struggled to get 3,000 people to watch them. You know, this Shells
team...
There
is a buzz, Pat, though.
Yeah, no, there is, and that, but it's... Why? I'm asking the question. I don't know why that buzz is there.
A lot of social media.
I think so,
Shells,
yeah.
Shells is the fact that they were out of the league for so long as well. But Pat's got a very good crowd for their
first
game. Derry have had two very good crowds.
But the key to that is keeping
it. Yeah.
If Shells at the moment are at a point where they're getting 3,000 people, if Shells can maintain 3,000 people for every home game... They won't have any financial
issues. I think on Niall Quinn, though, for example...
But Shells are going to have 8 games in a month at some stage,
yeah,
and that's what's going to...
But Niall Quinn, them, like, the timing of the Flores goal and that game, I think, in terms of... Lots of people are kind of now more conscious of the league, or they know more, and Niall Quinn can say, well, this is kind of what we have, or we could have, but we could be so much more.
Yeah, I don't know what the reasons for it is. I think there's been a bit of an awakening for whatever reason. I think Bows have done extremely well, and they've made it a night out. As you know, it's not just about... the levels of the football, it's about the experience. And like we always talk about match day experience. And, you know, that's clearly a bit of a buzz. But, I always say early season crowds can be a bit misleading. Like, they're good every year, generally. But there is something, I think, in Dublin... I sense it. I don't know where it is. I think is it a backlash at the Premier League becoming soulless that you?
I think there's a part of that. And I think there is a part of that people are sort of a little bit fed up with what's going on, watching it on the box and seeing the stuff that's going on. And I think, like you say, social media is a huge part of playing it as well. But we have seen early season crowds being good, but they're a lot better than they've been.
Yeah, no, they are.
And if they can maintain that, and that's the challenge for Bows have done it. In fairness, Bows have maintained their crowds because, like you say, the game is part of the night, but it's not that everything of the night is the biggest part of it, but they're able to maintain their crowds there. Can Shells do that? Can Pats do that? We've seen a drop-off in Cork's crowd because the team has probably dropped off in standard. So it's trying to... And that's where the big issues for clubs is that, you know, air supporters, are not the supporters, genuine supporters will go. More people will go if they're winning. But once they start to drop, and in Shells' case, it's going to be a good example, they're at a good level now. They've won a couple of games. If they have a little... dodgy spell, which they will have in the season, Does that drop off drastically, or is it just a small drop off?
There's not one person among the 7,500 odd who's at that game Friday who wouldn't want to go again. But what are you looking forward to the weekend, particularly? Another interesting.
I'm going to see Pats and Cork because I haven't seen Pats yet, so I'm just interested to see what Pats are like. And I would have expected them to be a bit better. But I suppose the flip side, it is early season for some of these teams, and you hope maybe after 10, 11 games they'll get better. And maybe it's just that the Dundalk Rovers are so established that. It's hard, but you'd be a small bit alarmed. That's what I'm looking forward to, see how Dundalk respond even going up to Harps. I think that's a tricky game. That's a test for them coming off the back of last weekend.
You're up in Belfast during the weekend, are you?
No, we've no game. We're away on Saturday, but I'll be in Dalymount on obviously working for the game on Friday. I'm looking forward to Shells.
I completely forgot about that.
Both Shells.
Because, remember where we are, John.
Because it
read it out a few minutes ago that he was actually on it.
It hasn't happened for a while. And again, you're going back to rivalry. You know, when I was playing for Shells, we had a huge rivalry with Pats at the time. Pat Dolan, Ollie, you know, built, and it was brilliant.
Characters.
You know, they were brilliant for the game because they drove and the gates were brilliant. We had that rivalry with Bowes when I was a manager. We signed Crowe and Bobby Ryan and Hawkins, and it caused absolute mayhem. And going back,
you're
there,
smiling now, even thinking.
it was brilliant. But it drove the rivalry, and that's what you need in the game. You need characters to drive the rivalry game. So I'm looking forward to going back to Dalymount. I think it'll be a cracking game.
I think we can safely say the Dundalk-Shamrock Rovers rivalry is only getting going. Thanks a million to Pat for coming in, and we will of course see Pat on the box on Friday. I forgot about that. Thanks a million for watching and listening. We'll see you next week.